I decided to adopt them to Foundation. Luke was a part of Foundation for many years, even before I was. And so we've been praying for them. We've been showing you pictures and giving you updates on their ministry for all these years. And so when this evening happened and the conference is taking place, started, I think, on Wednesday night, and we'll continue all the way through next week with all the missionaries, I thought this would be perfect for us to have our final end of semester party, celebrate America and celebrate our missionaries. And so thank you for being here. That's kind of the history behind tonight. What I want to do is I want to talk to them. These are friends. Their families are friends of mine, and many of you guys know them already. So I just want to have a conversation about what God is doing in their life, how ministry is going. So this is not going to be some formal Q&A. They'll have much of that next week, I think, answering questions and so on. But I do want to ask each of them questions specifically to make sure that everybody knows who they are. In fact, let me ask this. How many of you don't really know Luke or Carlin or Mike? Just raise your hand. This is not to embarrass, just to get a sense of how many of you guys don't know. Okay, so there's a few of you, about half a dozen or so, don't really know this. This is perfect. So we'll do that, and then we'll give you guys dessert afterwards as a reward for listening. Is that okay? Why don't you grab this mic, Luke, right here. This one should be working, right, Aaron? Okay. So you guys will just pass the mic around. And the first question I want to ask is introduce yourself and your family and little Anna Sophia, who's running right over there. So give us a little bit of a personal update, just who you are, even when you got married and even your connection to Foundation from years back.
Great. Thank you for the opportunity to be here. I love Foundation. I came to Grace Church in 2006 right out of college and started to come to Foundation in the beginning in 2009 when it had just become had moved from the Epic Bible Study, it became the Foundation Bible Study. So, and then when Mark came in 2012, was an under shepherd at that time, and just loved this group from the beginning. And just it was family. It was kind of where I grew up spiritually and learned to teach and to preach and disciple. And so, in 2011, I served on a short term missions trip to Uganda. And that's where I first met my wife, my now wife, Ruth. Nothing romantic came out of that short-term missions trip, but a friendship started, and our lives just were intertwined, serving in various capacities at Grace Church. And then in 2017, I was just overcome with a desire to pursue her, and so we started dating. 2018, we were married, and then in 2019... we had our precious daughter, Anna Sophia, who's now just turned 7 a week ago. She's in the back waving her hand. And then I had no desire to go into the mission field. Just let me go into that briefly. My wife just would periodically ask me. She had a passion and a zeal to go into missions. I personally did not. Every once in a while, she would ask me, and I'd say, I'm satisfied, I'm content just holding the rope.
Now, Luke, it would be helpful to know what background industry did you come from? What was your career?
Yeah, career-wise, so I'd come from 12 years in marketing in the entertainment industry, and then COVID knocked that out, shut down my job. I was put on furlough for a year, didn't have a job, and then... I was keyed into a position with a local tax management firm, wealth management, and ended up becoming an assistant to a financial planner. So that lasted, before going into the mission field, I was in the financial industry for 4 years. So that's the career background. And again, no interest in missions. And my wife starts asking me, okay, well, do you have a desire? And at first, I didn't. And then one day she said, well, have you prayed about it? And I said, well, no, I haven't. And in my heart, I was thinking, well, if I pray about it and it's God's will, then he'll send me somewhere. And I don't know if I really want to go anywhere. I'm comfortable in my life and ministry. I'm comfortable and content.
Were you praying like Jonah was praying? Like, don't send me, send somebody else? What kind of prayers were you praying?
Pretty much. That was definitely a Jonah moment and attitude, and really it was just rebellious. And so I knew I was convicted and knew, okay, if I can't contend with the will of God, who can? So I was just needed to go before the Lord and really seek his will and his desire for our lives and for our ministry. As I did that and came before the throne of grace, he started to change my heart and open up a desire to pursue missions. And at the same time, we're hearing about my brother-in-law, Thomas Hodzi, who was a master seminary grad from 2011, and his ministry in Zimbabwe. Ruth is from the country of Zimbabwe. So we're hearing about what's happening in Zimbabwe. At the same time, the Lord is changing my heart and redirecting it, opening it to a desire for international missions. And so those two passions or interests came together, missions, and here's an opportunity that we're seeing in Zimbabwe as we're going on vacations and trips, hearing about Thomas's ministry through newsletters, etc. And finally, I just said, okay, I said to my wife one day after church, heading home, what do you think about Zimbabwe? And I laid out all these reasons. And her first response is, well, now I need to pray about it. Because she had never considered going back to her home country. So that's just a brief, 2.5 years later, we're now been in the field for the past 7 months. So,
great. We'll get to the question about what you're doing there in a second. Let's move on to Carlin. And a similar question. How did you get to the mission field, but also what were you doing before then? And we want to know about Michelle and all the cute kids you guys are making, all that good stuff.
Yeah, thank you, Mark. So I'm married to Michelle.
Michelle, you got a wave.
Wave. And then we are blessed by God to have Gabrielle. She just turned 7 3 weeks ago. And Isaiah, he's 5. Isaiah, can you wave to everybody? Oh, you got an applause. Bubbups, good job. I'm a native of Burbank. I grew up at Grace Community Church. I was in student ministries with the Z family. And got saved at junior high summer camp, which is like happened just now, I think, right? Mm-hmm. For them. Yeah. If you guys know Chris Brackett, he was the MC and actually like it wasn't him preaching, but he was the one who was running the communion service where God got a hold of my heart and convicted me of sin for the first time. And then at age 16, I was coming home from baseball practice one day and my mom was like, Carlin, it seems like you're really enjoying your AP biology class. I'm like, yeah, it was so great to see how the body works. And she said, it seems like you really like helping people because I was doing some after-school tutoring for special needs kids. And I was like, yeah, it's so fun when they like get it. And she said, you know, you could do both of those things at the same time if you were a doctor. And I wanted to be a veterinarian before, so it wasn't like a huge leap from animals to people medicine, but it is a huge leap.
That sounds like an evolutionary theory.
yeah, as careers go. But it was just... In my mind, if I was going to be a doctor, I was going to be a doctor somewhere where people needed to know about Jesus and they didn't have a lot of healthcare. And so at 16, that's when God put it in my heart to do medical missions. And I said, Lord, if you'll open the doors, I will go through them. And so then I got to go to university and study biology and history and then medical school out of state. And then I came back for emergency medicine residency training at LA County, USC. And that's when I joined high school ministry as staff in the later years of that, all with the intention of going to the field with a team of people I had met in medical school who all had the same idea to use medical education as a disciple-making endeavor. Because going and treating patients is wonderful and you have all these opportunities to evangelize and to encourage. But if you have students with you, you're spending years with the same people and you can do that life-on-life mentorship, discipleship. And so we kind of formed a group and we said, wouldn't it be great if we could all go to the same place? Because we could probably go somewhere harder and stay there longer if we went as a team rather than going as just individuals to different places. And so that's how the original core team started. That was in 2009 that we kind of committed to each other. They're all 3 years ahead of me. So in 2012, when I finished residency, we all went to French language school together. And then we moved to Burundi in 2013, where we work at a Christian med school as part of a Christian university at a rural mission hospital that is now a 300-bed hospital. So it's huge and like one of the most like well-built and well-resourced hospitals in the country of Burundi. But we'll get into that in a little bit. I went in 2013, and in 2014, there was a missionary conference where the praise and worship band was all dudes and one lady. So the rose amidst the thorns was my wife, Michelle. Her last name is, her maiden name is Rose, so that helps. And the last day of the conference, her band convinced her to play a song that she had written and composed. Like, she did words and music, and she played it, and she sang it. And I had noticed her, and I was like, wow, maybe I'll talk to her on Facebook or whatever. But then she sang the song, and I was like, no, I got to talk to her today. Like, there's such depth and wisdom and insight evident. And by God's grace, she had put her Bible down in the seat that was behind me. So after the service, I turned around and talked to her, which was also God's providence, because they had been instructed not to initiate with the missionaries. The missionary conference is for missionaries to talk to missionaries. So I initiated. We had a conversation. I got her number, and we started dating. And 1 year later, like just under a year later, we were married in 2015. God gave us Gabrielle in 2019. Our thank you for the wave, Gabrielle. Good job. And then during COVID, we got stuck back in the States. And that's when God gave us our little coronial, Isaiah, in 2021. And yeah, and we've been back and forth to the field since then. But yeah, almost 13 years now of total service to Burundi.
So you in Burundi alone for a year or two?
I was there for a year, yeah, and then met Michelle. And we dated long distance, quite long distance, for a year before I came back, proposed, and we had about 3 months between engaged and married.
Got it. Okay, a couple years. Wonderful. Thank you, Carlin.
Boy. Okay, my name is Michael. I'll start with my family. My wife, Irina, and my daughters, but there's only one here. Jane, that's our oldest daughter, and Elizabeth, she is spending time with friends. Sorry, guys, no offense, but I guess she decided to hang out with some of her own age people.
And how old are your daughters?
17 and 13. So Jane is 17, and our younger one is 13. Connection to foundation, for the most part, it is through my relatives, Mark, and our cousins that have been part of foundation for some time now. And honestly, it's one of those groups that I don't know very many of you too well, but every time we come, you guys are very, very hospitable, very kind, always supportive, encouraging. So this is a very welcoming and a warm group for us. We feel very comfortable here and just a little overwhelmed, honestly, just the fact that we don't know you that well, but you guys are very welcoming to us. So thank you so much for that. If I was back at Grace, I'd probably be at Foundation. I don't have to make that choice, so I can say that makes it easy. Okay, so where do we start?
Well, go back. Yeah, how did you even think about missions? And maybe kind of like the guys did, just a little bit of missions life.
Yeah, so I am, Mark and I are the same age. We both...
I am older, wiser, so he does follow me.
So we're the same age.
I think we're 2 months apart, right?
About three months. You know, at this age, it doesn't matter too much.
That's true. I'm younger, actually. I want to be younger. Never mind. I am younger. But Mike did marry first.
You are younger and married, so...
Okay, I got to say this. Sorry to interrupt him. When we were probably early 20s, we made a pact that him, myself, and then we have a third cousin, Stephen, all of us are actually the same age within a month of each other, that we would be married by 23. We signed it. We have a document signing all that. And none of us got married at 23. Some of us got married much later than 23. So now back to you, Mike.
Yeah, but Mark is the only one that actually got close to the 23. Because he got married at
46.
46, yeah, which, if you do the math,
I doubled it.
That's, he just got his multiplications off a little
bit.
Yeah. But he actually, it's 23, so you're good. So I grew up in the Christian home, and so I was part of the church, and by God's grace, I had an opportunity, even as a younger teenager, to be involved in youth ministry and things like that. So I saw what Christian life was about. And I guess in my experience, I would say life and how God often leads us, it isn't these lightning strikes that boom and changes your entire perspective on life. At times it happens. There are certain people. In my case, it was fairly slow. It was in a relationship, a conversation, an experience that slowly led my mind and my heart to be open to missions. So I studied, you know, high school, then I went to college, went to university, studied business. Then after that, I realized I wasn't really a business guy. I don't know how to take money from people. So I went and did something that I thought I was more interested in, and I am more interested in that, is aircraft, aviation-related fields, studied to be an aircraft mechanic. In the midst of that, I studied to be a pilot. So when I studied to be a pilot, it so happened by God's providence that I studied up in Alaska with a missionary pilot. Not something I looked for. It just, again, in God's providence, that guy, individual, came to our church, spoke, and afterwards I was already in aviation, studying to be an aircraft mechanic. He invited me over to Alaska and said, hey, come to Alaska for the summer. I'll teach you to fly, and you can work for us. As a young guy, don't have any, you know, ties, why not? It's just the summer. I have it off anyways. And so I did that, and that was, I think, one of the introductions that I enjoyed doing what I was doing. I enjoyed flying. I enjoyed the aircraft, the planes. And I was not interested in missions at the time, but he was a missionary pilot. And that's something that was close to his heart and something that he often talked to me about as well. And so after leaving that summer, I did get my private pilot's license there, came back. I was not thinking about missions, but that seed was already planted. And so my experience in church, seeing my parents' life and their devotion to Christ in the church, the seed of this missionary pilot who used the gifts and the talents and that God has given him for reaching other people in communities and areas that are hard to get to. So that was planted in my life. Later, shortly after that, a few years after that, as I got more and more involved in the local ministry in the church where I was at, I decided to go to seminary. So that was another layer where I'm studying God's word. I'm enjoying that, but at the same time, I'm thinking, okay, Lord, where would you have me in the future? And I would say, just like my testimony, people ask me, how do you know what you're called to? And I would say, in my life, God's calling, it wasn't a mystical thing, but it was just an evaluation of what the experiences, the interests, the abilities that God has given me, which was my past, that we came from the former Soviet Union. I had that cultural experience. I had the language, somewhat as my background. Then God gave me an opportunity to an interest in aviation. He gave me an opportunity to work as an aircraft mechanic and a pilot for a while. So he gave me an interest in that. He gave me the skills necessary for that. He allowed me to enjoy that. Then he drew me into a ministry and gave me an opportunity to study at seminary. So as I looked at all that, I was like, where can I serve? Where would be the place that God would lead me to? And at that moment, when I was evaluating and thinking about where God would lead us to, we met an individual from... Am I supposed to go into this area or not yet? Met an individual from Russia, from Far East Russia, who was actually, with some help from American organization, starting up a ministry using aircraft to get into some villages to be able to do evangelism there. And so to us, already married at that time, it was like, well, you know, God, this seems like this is the direction you'd have us go. And so we started moving in that direction, even though honestly, I'd have to say I was not interested. I wanted to be involved in missions, but for whatever reason, it wasn't Russia. I didn't want to go to Russia. And God, again, also used my wife to, and I'll share that maybe a little bit later. It's not too big, but he used my wife to kind of to assure me that this is the route we should at least try. And we did, and God continued to open the doors, and that's where we ended up doing ministry.
Before we pass the mic back, how did you guys actually meet, you and Ira? Because the guys did talk about that. It'd be good for them to know as well. Or did you want to save that for the
kind of ministry? No, I can.
And how long have you been married and so on?
We met, basically we were camp friends. That's how we describe it. We both grew up in the church. It was Slavic churches, different cities. I grew up in Fresno, California. She grew up in Sacramento. But when we were in college, late high school, college, different retreats, camps, actually Crossroads retreat that was here. I think we've spent some time, Resolve, that was happening. And so she was just part of that group of friends that I knew about. And eventually, years went by, and I was one of those young guys that enjoyed what I was doing in aviation and ministry, but I just was not, I guess, thinking about girls too much. And then eventually God opened my eyes and light bulb burp, went on. And
that was a mystical moment, unlike missions. Yeah.
And thankfully, she was she has her story, obviously, at her end of it, but she was open to the relationship. And by God's grace, it happened fairly quick, just like similar to Mark's. I mean, we only had there was 6 weeks between when we decided to kind of realize this is it, that I should start dating her. 6 weeks went by when we got engaged. And then I was going to, month after that, I wanted to get married, but I realized it was a little foolish, a little too quick, yeah. And it would seem like we're covering something up. So,
wow.
And so we decided let's wait
a whole year.
No, it was a semester. We were both in school. I was actually continuing seminary, and she had a semester left. So she was in Sacramento. I was just moving to LA at that time, and so it seemed like okay, let's not be too foolish here, and wait a semester and then get married. So we've been married for 18 years now, and we've been in Russia for 8 of those years.
Wonderful. Let's go back to Luke. One of the uniqueness of the missionaries we have, part of Foundation, is that each of their ministry is not the standard Grace Church ministry. If you guys think about what GCC does, is we typically send a preacher, a pastor, or a trainer of pastors to various countries. These guys do ministry. They are teaching the Bible and so on. But the primary ministry is slightly different. And so I'd love to hear each of your primary ministries. And even Mike briefly said 8 years. How long have you been there? And what are you actually doing on a regular basis, on a weekly basis, monthly basis?
Yeah. So we've been in Zimbabwe 7 months now. So we're pretty fresh. But we didn't even think that they'd invite us back to the conference, but we're so thankful that they did, encouraged to be here and to be with you all now. And even just in 7 months, we are overwhelmed by the love of Grace Church. Grace Church is such a special, unique place. And when you're away from it, I think you really understand what it is doctrinally. Just the depth of teaching, the depth of love for the truth, the depth of love and commitment to Jesus Christ and his word. It's just so special. So we're just so thankful and shocked and surprised that we even get to be here, privileged. But we've been in the field for 7 months now. We left last November. And with the primary mission of church strengthening, we didn't feel like we were trailblazers necessarily, but we did see that our role here at Grace Church has primarily been one of support and strengthening pre-existing established ministries. And so we thought, well, maybe we can just take that and do the same thing in Zimbabwe. There's a need for more workers. The harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few, especially in Zimbabwe. There's no other GMI presence. There's no TMAI presence in that nation. But there is a TMS graduate that we have a connection to, that we're united to in theology, like-mindedness. So maybe we can come alongside and help to strengthen and grow that ministry as the Lord allows. And in the capacities that we were trained, specifically trained at Grace Church, I don't have a seminary background, but I have years of experience just serving in the church and being trained. You know, Grace Church is a sending church. It's an equipping church. And we were equipped in various ways that we now take that equipping and just place it in a new context of African ministry, specifically in the areas of biblical counseling. So there's just a massive need for biblical counseling. It's such a new concept in Zimbabwe and in a broader sense in Africa. There's just a huge view of integrationism. So there's a lot of what you call Christian counseling, but what they do is they integrate psychology and other worldly methodologies into their counseling. So the concept that God's word is sufficient in itself to solve the matters of the heart, the spiritual issues of life, is really a new, frankly, a new concept to them. And so I co-lead a biblical counseling cohort. We have 20 students. We meet once a month, and I'm developing a lecture series for that. Next year, we want to continue with a level one course and then add a level two course. So there's just a huge need for that. One of our students is a professional counselor, and he came up to me after one of our classes a few months ago, and he handed me a copy of this counseling book that he'd written, and he said, "I think I need to rewrite my book," because he had been just so overwhelmed with this new idea, this new concept of the sufficiency of Scripture for dealing with the matters that he deals with on a regular basis. And so there's a great opportunity in the biblical counseling world. Also, I teach a Fundamentals of the Faith class that meets monthly. Fundamentals of the Faith is in my DNA. I just love that material so much. It's the building blocks upon all other doctrines are built upon. It's the foundation. It's the groundwork of what we believe in God's Word. And so I just have a passion and a zeal to teach that course. It's also such a great evangelistic tool as well. We have some in our class that aren't even saved, and just getting their heart in front of the Word of God in that material is just a privilege every time. Then in addition to that, we started a home group Bible study that meets every Wednesday night in our home, that we're going through the book of James. I facilitate that and then split the teaching with some other younger guys in our congregation that I'm helping to raise up and build up as teachers in the church. And in addition to that, just developing discipleship relationships. And then on Friday afternoons, I go to the University of Zimbabwe, which is a university campus, literally 8-minute drive from where we live. Just providentially, the Lord placed us near that university. The church is down the street from this university. There's, I think, 12,000 students that attend, and there is such an eagerness to talk about spiritual things, to talk about the gospel. I'm constantly blown away of just their desire to, you know, can I take a few minutes here today to talk about the Lord Jesus Christ, to talk about the gospel? And I don't think maybe one time someone was rejected that request, but almost every time there's a willingness and an eagerness to at least engage in these evangelistic conversations, because Zimbabwe is a nation that would consider itself Christian, but that's very loosely. It's a cultural Christianity, so there's a familiarity with Christian ideals. But when you actually start to dig deeper, it's just a surface level. There isn't really strong roots there. So there's just such a great opportunity to really engage the youth in our culture, in our city, in our community, and to present them with the truth and majesty of Jesus Christ, which we're so thrilled and excited for. My wife is also looking to build up the women's ministry. They're planning for a women's conference starting next summer. She's also starting a women's ministry, which she's super excited about, this coming August, in addition to the primary women's ministry that's already happening in the church. So we're just thrilled to be only 7 months to just have such a clear focus of what we're supposed to do. You know, we had a plan in place, and it's just amazing to see how the Lord has just put all those pieces together to really engage, to jump in head first, and to just fill our lives with opportunities to represent Christ and train and strengthen and proclaim Him.
Thank you. Super interesting. Before you pass it, you mentioned your church. Can you give us a quick summary of just the church, the size, you know, services, things like that?
Yeah, so we attend our church's Covenanters Christian Church. That's about 110 members, 130 including non-members. We meet at an aquatic center in the city. So just be careful not to back up too far. You might get rebaptized. But it's just great. Just an incredible body of Christ. It's just amazing to sit in a room with people from a different culture, different background, different tradition, and we're all singing the same hymns, the same songs, learning about the same rich, deep theology. It just, the truth of God truly transcends all of our differences and our histories, and it's just an amazing body of believers to be a part of.
Is Thomas the senior pastor?
Thomas is two teaching pastors and a third lay elder.
Okay. Good. Yeah. Thank you.
Wow, Luke, that's a lot for 7 months in.
Yeah.
God be praised. So you might have deduced already from my presentation, I'm a physician, ER doctor. And so the profile of work for us in Burundi, being part of a Christian medical school and at a mission hospital, we do a lot of healthcare. For the first 9 years, I was the ER doctor and the professor of emergency medicine. And then 4 years ago, I became also the chief medical officer of the hospital. So that added a lot of administrative duties to my life. The goal of, if we talk about layers in an onion, the work that we have that God has given us to do in Burundi, there's an outer layer, which is kind of just development. We're building the hospital. So that means we have to employ construction workers and we have to do training for them. And that's all done in a Christian context, according to Christian principles, which is different than what Burundi grew up with. And then inside that is the patient care, right? So people come to us and they have problems. And some of those problems are just physical, but the people who come are never just physical, right? So we have opportunities to evangelize. And Burundi also thinks of itself as a Christian nation, but it's not. It is, I see some faces here that might have experience with Latin American countries where Catholicism came in and just got blended up with whatever was there before. And so in Burundi, it is not impossible that the priest who hands out the wafer and the cup for communion will go and slaughter a goat and read its entrails to tell you if you should plant your crops now or who put the hex on you, which is making it impossible for your family to, have a child or succeed in business. So that's the milieu. And so patients, even who think of themselves as Christians, come to the hospital and hear the gospel for the first time. So every year we have hundreds of people coming to saving faith through the ministries of the chaplains and the missionaries at the hospital. But then inside of that, we're doing training for medical professionals. So medical students, interns, and we have a surgical residency. That one's 5 years long. Internship is 1 year long. And we do the final 3 of 6 years of med school. So the clinical part of med school. So that means we get years with people to do life on life, mentoring, disciple making. And so we have, those residents, we get to choose who the residents are. So those are selected from people who have a testimony of saving faith, who have a track record. And so that's real disciple making. A physician, whenever they go into whatever community in Burundi, they will be a community leader. And in their churches, they are most likely going to be elders. So it's church strengthening through them. And that's the core, right, is the disciple making. We don't actually get to control the medical student admission. That is done by the government. So we have non-Christian and even Muslim med students who come to rotate with us. And so they see a Christian hospital operating on Christian principles and they get evangelized a lot because they take Christian medical ethics and they're exposed to their classmates all the time. And we're praying on rounds and we're sharing the gospel while we're seeing patients in the ER. And every surgery is prayed for before the knife touches the skin. So it's a unique opportunity there. And so then that's the, most of my time is spent there. We've also had the great privilege of doing a lot of more traditional, church-based work. So we translated FOF from French into Kirundi with the men who are now the pastor and associate pastor of our local church. Quick story. In 2017, it was Michelle's and my first Christmas together as a married couple in Burundi. And the sermon was from the golden calf in Exodus. And this is by the guy who is now the associate pastor. And he said in French, he's preaching in French at that time. He said, "This is an example of the first Christmas." And we're like, We just looked at each other. We're like, Golden Calf, first Christmas. How are you going to connect these things? And I have no idea how they were connected in his mind, because it was just like a rambling stream of consciousness sermon on I don't know what. Like, I mean, afterwards, we're like, maybe that, like, the way Christmas functions, it's like we're supposed to be about God, but we're not worshiping God in the way that he wants, which is maybe the connection to the golden calf. But he didn't make that connection, so we're trying. And we went home and we're like, we got to do some more work with this guy. So we started that FOF Bible study and we translated it. It's been deployed in like 12 different churches. We just went through actually the French FOF with the medical student Bible study. So I'm with you, Luke. Like, I love FOF. It's so much fun to teach and take people through. So doing that with medical students, doing that with the interns. I was the internship program director until we just left. And so that was a blast. And then to use those interns to come and teach the med student Bible study. Like, this is, you're raising disciples who will then go and make disciples themselves. And then investing in the church. So we're really blessed to see hospital, university, and church ministry all functioning together. The church owns, or the denomination owns, the university and the hospital. So everything is happening within that context, which is a blessing, sometimes a frustration, but also a blessing overall to have godly people in positions of authority and leadership there. And our missionary team is coming under that Burundian leadership at this point in time. So we're grateful for that.
And about the church, just give us your normal Sunday worship experience.
Yeah, so the Grace Community Church, thank you so much. You guys gave through faith, promise, and we were able to retrofit prior construction. And so the church now can seat, what do you think? Where'd Michelle go? I think the church could seat probably 700, although I think there's only like 300 there on a Sunday morning on a regular basis. But then when a special event, we can fill that place up. And there's French services and then Kirundi services. Kirundi, by far, the better attended service, because we're in a village of 500 people. So that's by far the language that everybody speaks. But the French is helpful because there's also Congolese or non-Burundians who are rotating at the hospital or spending time there. And then for the missionaries, that's way easier for us to do preaching in French. So even when I preach in the Kirundi service, I'll preach in French and then I'll have translation into Kirundi. And we just finished Colossians, which I think you guys finished on Sunday nights too,
yeah,
right?
Last week. Yeah, wonderful. Thank you, Carlin. Mike. How long have you been doing ministry?
Boy, that was exciting. I want to go join these guys. This is like very exciting. How long?
Yeah, how long? And just talk about your ministry.
So we've been in Far East Russia, the city of Khabarovsk, for 8 years now. And the ministry there, I'll start, I guess that's what most people, one of the reasons I already talked about, again, my career before going to the mission field was aviation. And so one of the reasons they use or need airplanes or aviation is because it's a large area, the area of Far East Russia. I think I've used this example many times, and so you guys. So that side, that area of Russia is about two-thirds the size of U.S. So if you take, you know, two-thirds, which is probably, you know, around 30 states, that's that size of that area of Far East Russia, which there are several large cities, Khabarovsk being one of them, and there's tons and hundreds of villages, locations that really have no roads. Very poor roads, very difficult roads, or no roads at all most of the time. And so because of that, aviation airplanes become a necessity just to get to those places. It's very similar if some of you guys are familiar with Alaska. Alaska is similar to that. There are lots of places, very few roads, only I think two official highways in Alaska. And so aviation is very developed, little general aviation in Alaska. And so that's why we went there, to help really with transportation to get to the locations, and there to be able to some places don't have any, most places don't have any believers, so it's a lot of evangelistic work. Some places have small groups of believers. There's you're encouraging, strengthening those groups. And some places have small churches, but very few. Most places that we go to, there's no believers at all in those locations. And so that's kind of the general scope of the ministry. Our involvement in ministry is basically everything. It's from taking care of the airport where the airplanes are, maintaining the airplane, maintaining the hangar that the airplane is in, flying to the location, figuring out, you know, making all the contacts with the people there, figuring out the program what we're going to do in the village, and then maintaining those relationships in the village once we've gotten there and built those contacts with the people, the evangelistic kind of connections that we've had there. So if you think about it, I mean, that's a lot. And there's really just was we came there to help another individual. That guy was working most of the time, and he just got married, and he had a kid after a kid after a kid. So he was pretty busy with life in the city. Mark, get used to for that. Get ready for that. So it's been a bit slower, honestly, for us. Just it felt like there's a lot of areas that needed to be covered, and by the time you do everything, it's a slow progress, slow going. By the time you maintain all the airplanes, by the time you get all the documentation right and everything right, plan out your trips and make those contacts with the people, you know, several months have gone by. And so it's been slower. But by God's grace, which is, again, it's something that he's done, we were not even doing any kind of recruiting, but slowly God has brought people that were interested in a similar type of ministry, who were really more missionaries than pilots or mechanics. And so we have just another family that came to join us fairly recently, about a year ago. And it's a great younger family. They have three young boys. And it's just been a huge encouragement for us to have them there. Now we can kind of distribute some of the work responsibilities and focus more on the people in the villages that we go to and the relationships there and the ministry that happens there. And so that's kind of the reason we went to Russia, the reason we're there with a specific skill set, I guess, of airplane mechanic, pilot, to be able to get out there and witness to the people. I didn't really say anything about the city. We do live next to a large city in Russian standard, 600,000. It's a large city. We do attend a local church there. We're involved in the ministry there. I know that's Mark's next question. So there I am one of the church leaders. They don't call me a pastor. Some people do. Some people don't. It's a little bit, I don't know, for whatever reason, they're not too clear on these things. I am part of their kind of church leadership, the decision-making. I do preach periodically, and we lead a weekly Bible study. So that's our primary focus in the church and that we're out in the local church in Khabarovsk. It's about 62 people. Usually maybe gather a little more than that, and our building is pretty much maxed out with that amount of people where we meet.
Good. Before you move on, and this question you guys will also answer, what's the most encouraging thing you've seen in your time there or maybe in the last year? Just something that just really refreshes you and makes you want to keep doing ministry there.
And somebody was asking me that. I would say the most encouraging is always when people hear and understand the gospel. And obviously more encouraging than that is when they respond to the gospel. In our case, at times, we don't always see the response, and obviously, at least not yet, we haven't. But even just coming to a lot of these locations, in Russia too, it is officially a Christian country. Russian Orthodox is the official religion. But like most places, most people, they have never seen a Bible. They've never obviously read a Bible. They might have learned something about God and the Bible in school, but very few things. And just to be able to explain from creation to Christ to his death, we normally do Christmas to Easter. And so that allows you to kind of do that scope and people understand who Jesus was, why he was born, why he lived, why he died and resurrected. And when people understand that, it's kind of fully understand that, not just say it, but when you come back after some time, sometimes after a year, and they can answer all the questions correctly, that to me is already a joy. And then obviously when they, especially sometimes you get notes from kids and others like that, thanking us for sharing about Jesus with them, that's always our greatest joy. Obviously we would want a greater response. We want more people to turn into Christ. But at this point we haven't seen a lot of that. But we're thankful for the opportunities that we have at this point.
Great. Thanks, Mike.
Yeah, thank you for that question. And it's so true, right? You see someone go from darkness to light, there's, I mean, the angels rejoice, right? How much more do we who understand what that means? I mean, I think of a recent case of a 36-year-old woman who had her fifth stillborn. And her husband left her because, I mean, she's in the hospital, like, bleeding. And he's like, you can't give me a kid? I'm out. And so this woman is, like, devastated. And that's when the gospel comes in and she understands it for the first time. And now she has Jesus who loves her and will never leave or forsake her. Not based on anything she can do or produce, but because of what he has already done. The life that he lived, the death that he died, the resurrection that he brings. So those are awesome stories. I'll follow it up with the things. I mean, John said, the apostle John said, I have no greater joy than this, than to see my children walking in the truth, right? In 3 John. And so, like, I'll tell you, Epaphras is the name of a doctor who worked with us and did the internship year, which is so great if you guys have studied Colossians. And so Dr. Epaphras was one of my guys. He's studying emergency medicine in Rwanda right now. But when he came to me one day a couple years ago and was like, Dr. Carlin, you know this such and such a medical student? You know, her name is Sada. And I'm like, yeah, I know that medical student. She rotated through the ER already. He's like, you know she's Muslim, right? And I'm like, yeah, I mean, she wears hijab, so we kind of figured it out. He's like, I was talking to her the other day and I was sharing the gospel with her. And you know, she's like, she's willing to talk about the gospel. I'm like, that's great. Like, what was your conversation like? And he relates this whole conversation and he's like, you know, Yusuf. And I'm like, yeah, I know Yusuf, the other Muslim medical student in her class. He's like, he's reading the Bible with me now. Cause I told him I'd read part of the Quran if he would read the book of John with me. And so he's reading the book of John with me. And so like Dr. Epaphras is evangelized. I mean, he's like doing my job, right? I mean, we said when we got to Burundi, we're not the best people for this job. Our students are, right? They speak the language. They understand the culture. They can hear and see all those things that I'll never pick up on in the patient interaction or with the med student. And he's there doing it. And that's like, that's the greatest. That keeps me going. To think of Epaphras and Merve and Fred, the guys that I've invested in who are now going on to do it in the medical setting. And then, you know, Luke and Fermat and Elise in the church who are like the preaching. We don't get the golden calf sermon anymore. Guys, I mean, we went through FOF. They got their MacArthur Study Bible as their reward for translating. And now the sermons are, you know, they're not perfect every time. And I mean, neither are mine. But but we're expositing a text now and we're working through passages. And just to see the stability and the like, it tends to be smaller and slower maybe if you're going verse by verse or you're going little by little. But the cumulative effect is that people are understanding. So when we hit like marriage and family and work relationships in Colossians 3 and a little bit of 4, like the response shows you that the congregation is prepared for that, which was a blessing. So those things keep them going.
Yeah, I think for us, you know, Africa is somewhat of an exotic place. And so I think we were expecting exotic issues. But one of the most surprising things of the past 7 months has been the issues are the same. Anxiety, depression, pornography, misplaced marital roles. And therefore, the solution is the same. The solution being the sufficiency of God's word that transcends culture, that transcends tradition, heritage, history, all of that. And therefore, the truth truly does set you free. And just to see the truth working in people's lives, in maturing the saints, in bringing the lost to salvation, there's just nothing greater than that. What an incredible privilege. And I just think of our pastor, John MacArthur's words, you know, the truth is a lion, just let it out. And there's a saying when it comes to Africa that the Christian church is a mile wide but an inch deep. And so just the desire and devotion to depth, it's just weighs so heavily on my heart. Like I just want to be, you know, God will take care of the fruit. Something else our pastor would say. If I work on the depths, he'll take care of the breath. So that's just in the back of my mind continuously. I just want to go as deep as I can to show the depth of truth, because there's such a lack of strong biblical roots here. And just that, and we know that the truth will accomplish a mighty work. It will set people free.
Thanks, Luke. I have two more questions for each of you. We'll start with this one. Looking ahead, what does life look like after you turn from the conference? When do you guys leave from LA? But then what does the next 6 to 12 months look like for you?
Yeah, so we leave on Monday the 13th. And so right after. Right after. We're excited to get back and just to dive into the various ministries we're a part of. One thing that's exciting that we're looking ahead to is there's one of our supporting churches we found out has a ministry, a pastoral training center in the rural areas that we didn't know about until maybe a year ago. And so we were able to attend their first graduation of 25 pastors. And that church, a Reflection Baptist Church, has 10 church plants as well in their area. And I was meeting with that pastor. His name is Juma, Pastor Juma, for the first time. And he became aware of our interest in biblical counseling. And so we started a conversation about hosting a biblical counseling conference later this year to help train the pastors and deacons at these 11 churches. And it's just an incredible opportunity. We're still thinking and talking through that, but just pray that would transpire and that I'd be ready to help move that forward. So
good. Thank you, Luke. Carlin?
Thanks. We are back for a longer time. We have an extended furlough this year of 1 year, and I'll be doing more seminary work and launching, God willing, a new sort of supporting ministry that will help to get the physicians, missionary doctors, and researchers from the high-income world connected so that we can do better research in healthcare missions. And then my mother-in-law is in the middle stages of dementia, and so it's our privilege to be able to walk with her through that sort of time and make some more memories with our kids with her. So there's some personal and some professional development obligations going on. What am I the most excited about? My first disciple that I invested in, who went away for emergency medicine residency training, will finish in August. So I'm excited to see how that integrates back. And we've been trying for 2 years to start the Emergency Medicine Society of Burundi. And so it would be great if that could happen. We have a real cool group of people, godly men and women, who are trying to start a specialty with Christ as the center, which I mean, it's like, it's bonk. Who's in health? Is anybody in healthcare in this group? We've got a few people. Yeah. The idea of a openly evangelistic emergency medicine society as the founding thing is kind of unique and interesting and fun. So I'd love to see that happen.
Thank you.
We go back August 26th, so we'll be here for a little longer. So we're kind of in between, and when we come back, we'll still be fall season. Russia definitely has all four seasons, at least in the area that we're. It has its summer, it has its fall, spring, and it certainly has its winter, which usually lasts about 5 months. So a couple of things that we'll do before winter comes is we have a couple of new locations that we wanted to fly to. Our goal isn't just to fly to these places. We often have to plan in advance, make contacts, figure out what we're going to do there, who we're going to meet and spend time with. So we have a couple of places already lined up when we come back, new places, locations that we want to go to. And so the way our ministry works is, we don't want to fly there. We think about the people that we're going to meet and spend time with there. And so one of the things that I'm excited about is that we've been kind of including more of the local churches in Khabarovsk to be part of this ministry, so we can pass on some of the responsibilities, some of the ministry opportunities in some of the villages to some of the local churches, and that opens us up, frees us up to do focus on other areas, new areas that have not been reached before. And so that's what we're looking forward to, and honestly, any fall season is always preparation for the winter, something that I did not think I have about, didn't, I didn't, you know, I was not prepared for it. I knew about it, but I was not prepared for it while living here in California. California, you don't have to think about the seasons. Over there, it certainly is a major part of your life. And so you better be ready for the winter before it comes, because it literally comes overnight. When it's summer, then fall, and then freezing and snow, and everything stops. And it doesn't melt until about 5-6 months later. So it comes really quick.
How cold does it get? Like, what's the coldest in the last 8 years?
The coldest it's probably got was around -40 Celsius, which actually Celsius and Fahrenheit meet at -40. So that's where it would be. But usually it's not that bad. Usually in Celsius during the day it's about -20 and at night it's -30.
So that's not that bad at all. Yeah, I mean, what are you complaining about in -30? Come on.
Wow.
But it's so you do have to be ready for that. And that's one of the challenges. One of the things I've been learning little by little, and you do feel anxiety because you don't know when it's coming. And it's almost like the rapture. You don't know when it's coming. So you have all these things lined up that you're trying to get done still before the freezing and the snow comes. And the weather, you know, you look at the forecast and it's kind of fluctuating, but eventually it just stops. And the freezing and the snow, and that's it. It's over.
Wow. Thank you. Last question, and I'd like for you guys to answer it thinking about us. And this is the question. You can go in any order that you want to, and we'll end on this last question. Having been a missionary, or still a missionary, and you've been living in a very different environment, from the weather to the church experience to the evangelistic opportunities, to whatever freedoms are restricted, what would you say, what would you do differently living in America, having experienced your missionary life, your perspective on life, your perspective on daily priorities, your perspective on your relationships, church life, anything like that? What would you do differently from 7 months abroad to 8 years to 13 years? And I'd love it if you guys can kind of turn it towards our Bible study that loves missions. I think many of us support missionaries. We certainly pray for missionaries. Many of you guys are probably helped for this week or next week's conference. I know Cammy and John are going to be up north the whole week serving in missionaries, and maybe some of you are also going up. So we love missions, but that would be such a helpful, hopefully perspective shaping answer.
I got something, but I don't know if this is what Mark was after. What would I do differently? And honestly, here's the thing. And what I would do differently, I think it applies to all believers. One thing that we ran into and realized, our life is always changing. We don't have just a set schedule, especially I don't. It's always varies by season. And honestly, I really regret, especially as a younger believer, I didn't work harder on establishing good habits in my, some of the basic Christian disciplines. Obviously, we've spent time in prayer, but because life is it's always changing. There is no set. I don't have an 8-to-5 type of thing, which I did here. And it's so easy to set good habits and really focus on those. Make sure you maintain those habits, because we all keep them for a while and then they fluctuate. But no, you make it a priority. And honestly, as I look back, I wish when I was especially a younger believer, I think it would have been easier now if I had those always in place in the past, and I wouldn't have to fight as hard for that now. So I would that's just something, I don't know, when Mark said, what would I tell you as a, before I left, and something I think is very valuable, it's those basic things as a believer. They will stay with you or with us for the rest of our lives. And the sooner we make it part of our DNA, the easier I think it's going to be. And I think that's something that I'm naturally not as disciplined of a person, and that's something I should have fought for earlier, I think. So I think it would have been a little bit easier of a challenge in this time when my whole life is very, very much sometimes feels like a chaos.
Thank you. That's super helpful, Mike. Thank you. You got this?
Yeah, I just, you know, thinking about tomorrow, the 250 years anniversary for this nation. And I think moving to Zimbabwe has only made my appreciation of the freedoms we possess here all the more striking, because there's just the openness we have of sharing the gospel, the openness of evangelism, the openness of assembly, and I think I took that for granted. And if I could, you know, tell myself years ago some wisdom, it would just be more courageous for the sake of the gospel. Don't hide your light. Let your light shine, that others may see it and glorify your Father in heaven. Don't be cowardly, but be bold for the sake and courageous for the sake of the gospel. God will give you the courage. God will give you the strength. Don't be unwise, but don't hide your light. Let it out. Just for the sake of Christ and his kingdom.
Thank you, Luke.
Now, those things are so good. Where were you guys 15 years ago to talk to me? I really don't have, I don't feel like I have a great advice. I wasted so much time. And I think that we are in a time is money, and like California, the pace of life in California is bananas. Like Burundians live at a humane pace and scale. And I really appreciate that about, I mean, you go as far as you can walk and then you're done. And if it starts pouring down rain, you stop because you're not going to walk in an equatorial rainforest downpour. Like that's unwise. You just cut a banana leaf and you have a little umbrella for a while. But I wasted so much time. I mean, like, and some of that is just like watching TV or playing video games. But like, I really should have been praying. I wish I had learned better to pray. And I did, I prayed and fasted a little bit. I like played with it a little bit before the mission field. But I think going on the field and being faced with some of the things that you are faced with in ministry, and this is not unique about the mission field, but when you get serious about serving the Lord, you are going to be confronted with stuff that you can't handle because he loves you too much to let you continue in that. And so I think my prayer life, I mean, certainly I'll just tell you, when I became the CMO, I was like regularly praying and fasting for extended periods of time because I had like, how do you run a hospital in Burundi? I never trained for that. I don't know how to do that. And we were in a crisis. Like we were worried that we're going to get kicked out of the country. So it felt big, but I wish, and it's kind of on what you're saying, like get those disciplines and those habits built up, strengthen your spiritual muscles by doing those things that Jesus modeled for us that we know are going to strengthen our faith and our walk. And I wish I had gotten more serious more quickly. And I wasn't an unserious, I don't feel like I was a super unserious person, but there's depths of spiritual intimacy with Jesus that you haven't yet experienced, that you haven't yet found. And he's there, like, you will seek me and find me when you seek me with all your heart. So just bring your whole heart, I guess is the final thing. Bring your whole heart to the seeking of Jesus, because the reward for seeking Jesus is finding him, is having him, more of him. And his love will fill you up. And whatever the thing is that you sacrificed, money or time or an ungodly relationship, whatever you sacrifice for him, he will give you more back than you ever imagined. And it'll be so sweet. And if that leads you to the mission field, come on down. We're ready for you in Harare and in Kibuye and in in the cold, frozen wastelands of Siberia. But yeah, seek Christ more, with more of everything, as much as you can. Your whole heart, soul, mind, and strength. And I know that's kind of vague and diffuse, but if you're wasting time, stop it. Start praying.
All three lessons are awesome. Thank you, guys. I love the fact that all three of you did not set out to be missionaries at 12 or 6. You know, that is not the path. You didn't grow up on missionary stories and you just couldn't wait to finish college and go to the mission field. It's just kind of, it's a reminder that God leads us at whatever age, very uniquely and personally, and you can have an impact that you have never imagined. But also, thank you. Those three lessons are fantastic, and it's super easy to apply. This is our last Bible study for the semester, and the summer will give us opportunities to do more evangelism, as Luke said, on the 25th of July, 3 weeks from tomorrow, we're going to have beach evangelism. So think about it. Don't just pray about that day. If you're local and you're not committed to anything on the 25th, go. Go with Jose. Go to Santa Monica, evangelize, and pray ahead of time, as Carlin just said, and don't waste time. But I do think, even what Mike was saying, the disciplines that we should set in order, what a perfect time to do it in the next month or month and a half when we have off. We have time on Fridays for sure, right? You will have Friday night off. And so do that. But I also want to encourage you to invest into the relationships that we have. The Wendlers are here for a year, and they'll be local. They'll be coming to Grace Church. They'll do a little bit of travel for fundraising and support and things like that. But they're local. And Mike will be here for almost 2 more months with his family. So just be watchful for missionaries. There are about 100 missionary families here for this coming week, and then some are staying past next week. So first of all, pray for them next week. You guys, this is a time for them to be refreshed, right? I assume that's one of the things you're looking forward to next week, not just with each other, but with the elders and those who are serving. So pray for them. Pray that what they came here for will be accomplished. And make sure that we don't forget them. We don't need to get into many, many specifics, but I know that every single time I email or text them, they're so encouraged. Because imagine, they're alone. They're gone. And there's hours and hours and hours of time difference. 15 time hours? 17 hour difference. What's the time difference?
9 or 10?
But the same. And so even that alone sets a wall in communication with people back here. So be praying, be thinking, and communicate by email. You can talk to Josiah and he'll set you up with their emails and their families and so on. I know that it's always fun to get an email from somebody you care about, and they certainly care about us as a church. Before I pray and let you guys enjoy some dessert behind me, right? I do want to make sure that we're all thankful to God for what He has done in our Bible study. Just a couple things. 3 people became members last Sunday night. I don't know if anybody's here who became a member, but is Jackie here by any chance? Okay, maybe not. So think about that. 12 people were baptized this last season, last fall and the spring, who were foundation people. We had 6 engagements. I contributed to that. We had 6 engagements. You guys, that's awesome. In 2 semesters, we had 6 engagements. And even more important and exciting is 3 babies were born this year. That's so cool. And then there's at least one. Yeah, thank you. Celebrate the babies if you don't want to celebrate the engagements. Come on. And then David and Lily are going to have another one in October. Little girl, right? Awesome. So exciting. So God is working not just through new babies, but He's working through baptisms and conversions and memberships and missionaries. So let's thank God for what He's doing in our lives. And you guys can keep fellowshipping. Before I pray, a special thank you to Sergio, Lindsay, and your family for the dinner tonight. Thank you for doing all that for us. We loved it. It's fantastic. And thank you to everybody else, to Josiah especially, for leading this year. You guys have been super patient with me as I've been away, sometimes for ministry travel. Obviously, if you think back, it's been a year. Just in about a week is Pastor John's 1-year anniversary of passing, going to heaven. And so, you know, a lot has happened in the last 12 months here. And so some of that affected me directly because of my job. And so you guys have been super patient with letting me be gone. And Josiah led so well with Alex. So thank you guys. I don't know if Alex is still here, but thank you both for doing that. But especially Josiah doing so much admin, and especially for all the events and Friday nights. And thanks for being patient. I've been gone for 4 or 5 weeks, I think, the last time. So because of the honeymoon and the wedding. So thank you guys for loving us and welcoming me back as a married man. And one more thing. On August 12th, so July 25th is our beach evangelism. August 12th, we're going to do a praise night, which is a Wednesday at the church. So we'll do a praise night, a little bit of prayer testimony. So if you're around, be available for that. And then we'll resume about a week or a week and a half after that. So we'll send you guys the dates in an email. Stephanie will do that. But this officially kind of ends the semester for us. And thanks for all your work. Thanks to those who decorated and contributed to celebrating 250 years of America. And I love what Luke said earlier, and I think we need to remember that. As the world gets darker, as this nation gets darker, be thankful to God for what He has allowed us to experience in America. The more people you talk to from around the world, the more you realize how many freedoms we do have, both political and religious and even economic stability that isn't there. And currency gets devalued quickly in so many places, and economics just crushes people's life. And so be thankful, you know. We're not going to celebrate America as we do Jesus, but we should be thankful that God planted us here and that 250 years ago people, the Puritans, came and started a country on biblical principles, on the Judeo-Christian ethic. And 250 years later, we're beneficiaries of that. And so whatever God is doing in your life, you're in a country that has a lot of freedoms. And so let's be thankful for that. And let me pray for that. And then you guys can enjoy your ice cream sundae. If you're able to stay and help clean up, please do so. We'll probably start doing that in about half an hour or so. Wonderful. Anything else, Josiah? Great. You'll do that. Let me pray for us. And then you guys talk to the missionaries, hang out with each other, have a wonderful evening. And then we'll see you. Let me say two more things. Sorry, I keep finding things to say. Sunday is Missionary Sunday. So don't skip church. Come to the morning, the evening service. It's going to be an awesome, lively Sunday for us. The missionaries are going to be on the patio. You can talk to many of them. And then Sunday night service will also be focused on the missionaries. And then next Sunday, the 12th, is our church's 70th anniversary. So whatever you're doing, you better be at Grace Church because it's going to be a big party. We have H.B. Charles coming to preach on Sunday morning, do a charge. He's going to have Stephanie was texting with him yesterday just to kind of confirm the message. So it's going to be a fantastic Sunday. And then at 3 o'clock, we're going to do a communion service as well, just as a way to say thank you to God for what He has done for 70 years at Grace Church. There'll be breakfast. There'll be lunch available. So it's going to be a wonderful day at Grace Church. And my last comment is Sam Britton, one of the founding members of Grace Church 70 years ago, died yesterday. And so we now have one more person, Dolores Michelson, who's 95. She's the only living person who started Grace Church 70 years ago. And so we saw her yesterday at the missionary dinner. She's still around. She's in a wheelchair, but hopefully you'll see her either this Sunday or next Sunday. And if you do, just come up to her and thank her for starting Grace Church 70 years ago, because you guys are beneficiaries of that. All of us are. Okay? Lots happening this summer at Grace, and so we should be thankful for all that. Let's thank the Lord. Lord God, we do thank you for your blessings in so many ways, from friendships that are reflected here at this house, to the Sauer family who purchased this property to bless the missionaries and the seminary students and the church's Bible studies like ours. Thank you for them and their sacrifice. We thank you for the missionaries that are here this evening, Carlin and Luke and Mike and their wives and their kids, their family that you have given them. Thank you for their faithful ministry in the places that you've placed them. We ask that you continue to bless them as they look ahead to do ministry and as they pray and as they fast and as they think about how to best use their time to advance the kingdom in that part of the world. We ask that you would bless the work of their hands. Give them enough spiritual fruit to keep them encouraged and moving forward, and at the same time, keep them dependent on you through prayer and through fasting and through many other spiritual disciplines. We do thank you for Grace. Thank you that Sam Britton and the Michelsons and the Smiths and multiple other families, 8 families total, started Grace Church by faith on July 1, 1956, in order to be a light in Sun Valley, California. And we thank you that 70 years later, you have done things that are beyond what they have imagined or thought. And you have blessed all of us as part of Grace Church. We thank you that we are beneficiaries of Pastor John's ministry for many of those years. And as we anticipate his 1-year anniversary of entering heaven, just on July 14th, we ask that you would continue to bless his family, his kids, his grandkids, his great-grandkids, that they would reflect on his life in just a couple weeks from now in a way that is a reminder of how many millions of people have been impacted by his preaching and will continue to be through grace to you, through the seminary, through the university, through TMAI, and through Grace Church. Thank you that we got to see him face to face and to sit in the pews and to learn. Help us to not forget that privilege, that history, and to carry on that legacy. Keep us faithful as he was faithful until the end. Keep us focused on Christ, courageous in our evangelism. Help us to remember not to waste time, especially this summer, to set things in order to fulfill the ministry that you have entrusted to us. And thank you that we are in America, that we're in a country that continues to give us freedom even amidst the darkness that we feel and we sense from so many movements that are unbiblical, ungodly, morally reprehensible, and yet we still have the freedom to do what we're doing right now. We're not in fear of arrest, decapitation, lifelong sentence in prison. You give us the freedom to worship and to enjoy each other. Thank you for the Bibles that we hold and carry and can read on a daily basis. Thank you for what you have done in each of us and in Foundation through the last year. And thank you for all the blessings. And in response, we bless you. Amen.